Hey, everybody. Happy Thought Crime Saturday. Make sure you download the Rumble app and listen to us every single week. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. And email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
They are counting on your surrender. If you give up, they win. But what if we look back and we realize we were just inches away from victory, and that's when we decided to give up?
Join us and thousands of American patriots for the summer convention that all are invited to.
You're going to hear how we're going to win in 2024.
With the biggest speakers in the movement, featuring President Donald J. Trump.
We're going to fight and we're going to win.
Charlie Kirk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Kristi Noem, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, Lara Trump, Senator Rick Scott, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Benny Johnson, Jack Posobiec, and more. June 14th through 16th.
2024 is our final battle.
In Detroit, Michigan.
The great silent majority is rising like never before.
Join us for the People's Convention.
This is a new ball game, everybody. You send a message. We play to win.
Register now at tpaction.com/peoples.
Okay, happy Thought Crime Thursday. Jack Posobiec here. Charlie is on assignment, but we've got a really strong show. We've also got a very special guest, but we're going to save that for last. I'm here in Washington, D.C., but over in Phoenix, we've got our illustrious co-host, Mr. Blake Neft. What's up, Blake?
Hello. I survive. I persist. You cannot get rid of me, Jack.
It will happen. The day will come. Your day will come. But of course, the day has already come for our other co-host in Phoenix, Tyler Boyer. What's up, Tyler?
What's up, guys? How we doing?
Yo, that hat is awesome. Where'd you get that?
This is actually, oh man, you put me on the spot. I can't remember it.
Is that an official hat?
You wore the hat.
No, this is.
That's definitely not official.
I think this is Chad's. Is that the brand?
Okay, I don't know my hat.
It's
brands,
with let me see here. I think it's two A's, Chad. Anyways, I'll pull it up.
Are they a sponsor? If they're not, they better be. And we do have a very special guest before we get into our thought crimes, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from parts unknown, Mr. Mike Benz. Mike Benz Cyber, what's up, brother?
How you guys doing? Great to see you tonight.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I mean, it's pretty obviously like Miami area, but you know, like Ben's is like the least OPSEC aware of all of us.
In an underground
like, triangulating his position.
Yeah, we're triangulating Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. Yeah.
You would probably like there have been times where drone strikes have been called in just because like somebody posted a picture from a balcony. Just saying.
Oh, you know,
just
saying. Maybe someone will send me a love letter, you know, in a drone. That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, he's the guy.
Mike, for people,
opening sound effects, you know, we have like if they want to get you, they'll get you. They're basically saying that about Mike Benz.
Benz, for people who don't know, introduce yourself real quick.
Hey, what's up? I'm Mike. I run the Foundation for Freedom Online. My mission in life is to restore the promise of a free and open internet and, setting free speech free. So I'm here to serve that mission.
We love it. And for all of our Rumble followers, I think Mike Benz will be no stranger to you guys. So want to get into our first topic. Blake, do you have a rundown on this? It's called The Death of Doxing.
All right. Yes. We have a good topic to open with this week. It's not bad news. It's good news. So doxing has hurt many people, including myself, in a rather dramatic way.
Blake, do you know anything about doxing?
Exactly. But so they tried to pull another one on us this week, and it failed really comically hard. The target of this doxing attempt was a guy on Twitter who goes by the nom de guerre Lomez, and he got doxed by Jason Wilson of The Guardian for being the head of Passage Press. That's a new publication house. They publish new editions of some old books by kind of just prominent, like old, like reactionary, conservative writers of various strands. And then they also do some new books. They notably put out the collection of Steve Saylor's writings called Noticing. And they've got some other books coming out in the near future. I can't remember which ones they have specifically, but he's behind that. And so The Guardian was just seething that it existed, seething that Lomez was on Twitter and not known. That is Wilson. That is not Lomez, thankfully. That is Wilson. That's the man who did the doxing.
Oh,
he looks, I don't think he's officially related to Jabba the Hutt. I think it's merely a coincidental.
He reminds me of that annoying guy from the Toyota commercials.
Ooh, that's gruesome.
Yeah, I like it.
We'll see if they can find that one. But yes, so he is a most unfortunate looking person and with a most unfortunate soul within. Remember, if you're ugly on the outside, you're ugly on the inside too. Unless you're me.
Judge all books by their covers, which, of course, since we're talking about a publication house, I would say that's quite apropos. No, do we have the picture of Lomez? Because he's been, you know, I wasn't sure if he, so we had him on my show earlier this week, and he wasn't, you know, I told him, I said, look, if you don't want your picture out there, you don't have to do video, you can do audio only. But he was like, no, let's go ahead and do it. And he put his name out there and he was more than happy to show his face. And let's just say he's he don't look like Jason Wilson. He looks like a totally normal guy that you would just see walking down the street, which is kind of part of the big problem for this doxing attempt is like nobody can actually really understand why they decided to dox this guy because there wasn't really anything they found in there other than like he supported, I don't know, basic right-wing things. Like he supported Kyle Rittenhouse.
The funniest thing about it is like if you bring up the article here, I've got the article on the side computer here. If you bring up the article, they have photos of all of these other people. So they're like, oh, here's Ernst Jünger. He's a German World War I veteran who wrote some books. And they've published him. They're like, here's Ernst Jünger. Here's Peter Rangel, the leader of the Russian Whites. What they never have in this doxing article that exists to reveal someone's identity, they never have a photo of Lomez himself. And the answer is because Lomez is way hotter looking than the guy doxing him. And he's basically like, then you can find the, so it turns out he was a college professor at,
UC Irvine.
UC Irvine, English professor. And you can find his Rate My Professors page. And there are reviews, not new ones. These are reviews from 5 years ago where they're just like, oh my God, he's so hot. and he's a good, you know, instructor. He's good at that too.
Blake,
he's mostly
did you
hot.
Have his class? Did you know? Is there
Were you the rate?
No, they
provider?
All say it.
I was not. I merely investigated this. I, you know, like.
Did you submit ratings?
I did not submit any ratings.
Did you dark web ratings? On
no, that? No. Stop it, Tyler. You're out of control. No. Look, all I'm saying is, you know, like we're all perfectly straight here, but if we weren't, you know.
Well,
is your hall
pass,
is that what you're saying?
I don't know Mike's relationship status, but Jack and I have really great, you know, beards. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, you have great beards?
Yeah. Sure. Or is that how it goes?
Yeah.
Well, here.
Oh, before blonde, we move on, by the
blonde
way,
wind, blonde
because we go completely off the rails, here's the real question about this topic. Is that, you know, Blake, you know more than anyone that doxing and canceling in the past was extremely powerful. And so I want to throw this to Ben's real quick since we've got him on. it's and Ben, you were someone who they tried to go after you and they were like, oh, he had like a fake podcast and all this stuff. And it was ridiculous. And it was like a one day story. And they hold it over your head for like weeks beforehand. Oh, we're digging into your past. We're digging up all the skeletons. And then the story runs and they always kind of backfire. I feel like ever since Elon bought Twitter and Darren Beatty, we're all mutual friends with Darren, had along a couple of tweet threads about this saying that the whole kind of hierarchy of doxing is now completely inverted. Explain to me why that is, Mike.
Well, you know that meme where it's like someone calls you a racist and then you and you're like in a crowd of people, they call you a racist and then you go in the corner by yourself. And then they call another person a race and that person sort of comes in. And then suddenly the whole party is like with the people who've been called race. You know that meme? And it's I think that effect happens for pretty much everything now because cancel culture during the sort of peak of unchallenged wokeness, you know, I mean, it's sort of in tandem with this push against wokeness altogether. I mean, the fact is, like, it's not just Elon who's, you know, leading an anti-wokeness crusade, so to speak. Bill Ackman, I mean, giant institutional investors. You have Joe Rogan turning against it. You have Jerry Seinfeld turning against it. You know, the linchpin of what made wokeness powerful was the threat to cancel you if you didn't go along with the program. And I think back, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was one of those things where it really was the kiss of death to be canceled because it was a very small clique of people who were canceled. But now pretty much everybody who's lived through the Trump era and is still a Trump supporter is in a party of canceled people. Everyone experienced, I think, what it felt like to be a Trump supporter and be canceled from something. Because if you're a Trump supporter, you are de facto a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, pick your ism. And so I think, you know, basically it got to be the point where when people started to get canceled, it was like, oh, cool, here's another person for the party. And I think that's what happened with Lomez. It's like, hey, cool, you're one of us. Come join.
Yeah, it's also kind of like, hey, these people are interesting. We should check them out these days. Like, oh, they're going after somebody new. And in this case, it really was somebody new because Lomez, I think he only had like 25,000 followers on Twitter, which is decent to say the least. But it's not like this was some huge, you know, millions of followers. Yeah, it's not like libs of TikTok when they went after her. But that's also a great example of this, of what I'm talking about as well, because when they went after libs of TikTok and they doxed her, she only became 10 times more powerful than she originally was. Blake, you were saying.
Well, so a guy we all know, Darren Beatty, had a pretty good take on this on Twitter the other day, where he just points out, like, one of the most important things is there's kind of a herd immunity effect. If you're only – cancellation is the sort of thing, if you're going to do it once – it's incredibly powerful where you just say this one person is just not acceptable and shove them out. But they really started to do it a lot. They were doing it, you know, to several, like, I guess they did it to like dozens of people in 2020, and they've tried to keep doing it since. And it's just at the point where, you know, you look around and there's like 30 people who've been doxxed or canceled on the right. And so everyone just thinks, wait, is this actually a big deal anymore? And I think people are concluding it's not. And also, you just eventually needed the point where a few places would go, yeah, we're just going to ignore that. The more passes you've got on it, the more understanding there is on how to beat it. And it turns out that the best way to defeat any doxing attempt, there's basically two paths you can do. You can literally just laugh at them and laugh at the person attempting to do it. But one that works, and it especially works if they actually have, I don't want to say something valid, but like something that at least is like mildly bad looking for you, is you just ignore it. It's a lot like any other hostile news story. So much of the energy comes from trying to like push back or dispute something or argue with it, and that all that is an excuse for them to write another article about it and then like repeat everything. So the way you beat it is you just pretend it didn't happen and you issue no comment.
Totally.
And we saw a lot of that. I can't remember. There was one that happened, I want to say, earlier this year, where it's like they dox and just every single person who they try to cite in it just says no comment. And then what's the news story?
No one comments on it. There's nothing.
Was that? Yeah. I think that was the Hanania one.
Oh, yeah. I think it was that one. And so they hit up these like venture capitalists or like people who donated to his
LLC. They kept trying to get they kept trying to get him canceled from various things. Yeah, and everybody was just like, yeah,
the only place they succeeded with was the University of Austin, which was supposed to be like the anti-canceling upstart university thing. It was kind of funny. And then, but everywhere else just said, no comment. And that's the solution.
By the way, I want
to say no comment.
As we're having this conversation, and since Blake has said it so many times, Blake, if you can handle it, let's play or show clip 174. Show number 174, please. And we can show everybody what exactly it is that Blake, or who exactly it is that Blake was just gushing over on his Rate My Professor page. And it's very interesting. Tyler, while they pull that up, Tyler, I want to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, are we pulling up the Rate My Professor page right now? Is that what we're doing?
They said 174.
No, they're just pulling up the picture. Yeah, 174.
Yeah, I mean, I just think doxing's stupid. And we were just talking about, like, this entire thing is like doxing and swatting are like they've got to be like the lamest things that you can possibly do.
Yeah, and it's always
like, it's the equivalent of children just like tattletelling on people and like hoping that like your parent or someone else cares. And that's to me what like doxing is. And like you said, and the best way to handle it is if you don't respond, if nobody responds to it, nobody feeds into the fire.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if you can resist, you can respond as long as like the response is to like, you can't really engage with their moral framing of it. You have to have contempt for their moral framing. The libertarian economist, Brian Kaplan, who I otherwise disagree with on a lot of issues, but one of the things he likes to point out whenever they do cancel stuff is he says, you should always ask yourself, is this worse than cheating on your wife and then leaving her and your children to like be with a side piece? Because people do that all of the time.
Yeah.
Public people do that all of the time.
All the time.
And we just like shrug and move on and say, you know, that's like a private matter.
Like a congressman in Georgia.
Yeah, like congressman, movie stars, athletes.
No, like McCormick in Georgia today.
Yeah, if we want to mention that one. Yeah.
I mean, like, so, literally, you know, everyone's like, you read it, you're like, well.
Yeah, you know, that's too bad. That's pretty bad. Like, that's
whatever. You know, but most people are like, whatever.
At least accept that happened, or like we tolerate the existence of that. And then we turn around, or for that matter, we're supposed to be forgiving of people who sometimes have committed horrible crimes that have like maimed or even killed people. And then we have to turn around and they're like, Mr. Neff said a mean thing on the internet one time. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
And then Fox News calls you horrific and does all these other mean things to you. Just hypothetically. Yeah. Real quick,
Go ahead.
I just want to do this. We have a conservative Cheryl is a monthly supporter, so we want to say thank you to read all Rumble. We'll read all Rumble rants today if anyone wants to make any, and we will acknowledge all subscribers. So thank you very much for that, Cheryl. Now you can go, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say the other thing is I think everybody has a certain fear of being canceled themselves and is aware that when you throw other people under the bus, they will not come to your support when it comes for you. So there has been, I think Jack sort of referred to it as a kind of herd immunity, which is like, but I think that's part of that comes from the fact that when you see someone get canceled, I think it used to be the case when you didn't have that same fear, there was an instinct to kind of dogpile and virtue signal and get your sort of, you know, Pokemon points from the whole thing. But now I think the fear of having seen so many other people get swallowed up by it, you don't want to be a dogpiler because then who is going to support you when the dogpile is on you? And there's kind of a similar thing with the censorship situation. You know, internet censorship really started, you know, against a kind of very fringe element in 2017, you know, the kind of section of the MAGA crowd that was very easy for the sort of mainstream Republican crowd to say, well, you know what? Censorship's not a great thing, but we can't defend these people. And then the next layer up, and then the next layer up, and then the next layer up. And then suddenly, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is getting censored, and Rand Paul is getting censored. And then the president of the United States is deplatformed. And then it's like, okay, you know what? Free speech for everybody, because, you know, what we're up against is such a monster that we all need to have each other's back, you know, even if we have internal disagreements to some extent. And I think that's sort of what's happened with the cancel culture thing.
You know, another thing that's also good is, as you mentioned, the herd immunity, but it's also that at this point we've had many cancellation attempts. And what each of those are is it's kind of an opportunity for every single person who's a bystander to kind of pass or fail a test. And so if you're on the right, you actually have a pretty good understanding now of who is trustworthy to stand by people when bad stuff happens to them and who has failed this. And over time, as a result of this, you have a stronger conservative movement because you're basically everyone is collectively selecting for who's not going to wuss out when things get hard. And so it's like Brotherhood of Steel or some stupid, cheesy sounding analogy for this. But
no, it's a great point. Virtue signaling is sort of in the opposite direction now, whereas like before it was like a virtue signal to join the dog pile. Now it's a virtue signal to say, screw the dog pile. You know, I was about to give the other set of fingers, but I don't know if this is a family show. So
my mom is watching and
Jack's ready for the blur. You have a blur button, don't you?
No, I just call it the Blake button. We have a delay on the show, but just for Blake. So this was set up after the lawyers reached out to us and said, look, Blake is involved in numerous indictments, Farrah investigations. He's been working with the mob, the Mexican drug cartels. Apparently Blake has been like selling fentanyl around the Turning Point studios. It's very interesting. We just got a dump button, but it only affects him. Actually,
there's a loose brick in one of these walls that I think has all his mom.
It's in the bathroom. Yeah.
Do you see the background here? All these loose bricks. There's a certain one you got to tap it. It's a hollow. So
it's actually Blake leaving the cocaine at the White House. But you know, just kind of the last white Diddy. He is like the White Diddy. But the real last
the White Diddy. that is rough. That is rough.
Wasn't that Jeffrey Epstein? let me put the last question to you on the before we move to the next topic, which you know before we're completely canceled, is. What is it? So there's a connection. There's a direct connection between censorship and doxing, because usually the way it all worked before Elon bought Twitter was someone got doxed, someone committed wrongthink, or as we would say around here, someone committed a thought crime, and then they would get suspended from Twitter and canceled from, you know, public society. They're trying to do the same thing to this this NFL kicker for the Chiefs right now, because he like gave a Catholic, convocation speech at a Catholic university, and you know they're going after him now. And so the problem though is because the censorship has been shut down, and also the speaking of doxing, the Kansas City like Twitter account, some employee, rogue employee there, actually tweeted out where he lives, completely insane. So. You know, canceling, doxing leads to canceling. Doxing can lead to swatting, which is something my family has experienced. And a number of people in the movement have experienced, because once they realize they can't censor you and they become impotent with their canceling attempts, they just try to move on to other means. So, Benz, walk me through how it used to work and why they are becoming so desperate.
Yeah, well, there used to be something called, it's still here, but it's called media escalation. Which is the inbound email that a platform gets when there's been a hit piece on somebody, and the news, you know, the journalist, whether they're from the New York Times or the Washington Post or BuzzFeed or Politico, will not just sort of ask for comment from the target of the dox attack, but they would also send a concomitant email to YouTube if they had a YouTube account, to Facebook with their Facebook account, to Twitter for their Twitter account. And basically send a threatening email to them saying, do you know that you are hosting a person who's engaged in hate speech? And this is a major brand safety risk for you, don't you know? And don't you know advertisers are going to respond very poorly when they see this story? And this would be a media escalation that the inbound would run up the chain to the, you know, to the higher levels at those social media companies. And so it was a very effective tactic for actually achieving cancellation, because it would go hand in glove with a kind of deplatforming because of the business interests of the platform in order to keep their advertisers, who themselves were under the gun by various other forms of pressure. And you know, that hand gesture that I was going to make earlier, was one that Elon Musk made in a very powerful gesture when he basically formally eschewed that entire coercion process, when he said GFY to advertisers and said, you know, we're going to basically build our own pirate ship through subscriptions. and through other kinds of products and services like, you know, the premium and Grok and other, and the other assets, frankly, that Elon has from his empire, but not being subservient to advertisers in a totalizing fashion and trying to diversify the business has actually, and the fact that he's willing to lose money on the platform in order to preserve free speech has made it so that Twitter is actually one of these places now that is pretty much rock solid when these, in terms of your platform security, where that was not the case under the Jack Dorsey era. Jack Dorsey even said the whole reason he banned Trump was because of a business decision around how they were going to financially destroy the company unless he did.
Also, I'm seeing some people in the chat, by the way, who are asking, and perhaps this is remiss of us for not saying, so there are people asking, what is doxing? And doxing is different layers, different definitions. I would say my tightest definition would be number one, taking something or someone who is anonymous on the internet and publishing their name. And then the next level of that is publishing their personal information. I don't know. Would you guys add anything different to that?
Yeah, it's like, I think the original use of it would be publishing just someone's home address for the purpose of like trying to harass them or annoy them. And then what you started to get during the cancel culture era was you would take someone who was anonymous online and then publicize their identity for the sake of shaming them, getting them fired, getting them humiliated, all of that sort of thing. And then I feel like that's become the main purpose of it, is just the stuff like this. We're like, we're going to show Lomez's identity so that we can try to ruin his life in some capacity, especially if there's no other justification for this other than just we want to blow this person up. And so that's kind of what it mostly refers to. I feel like you don't hear it used as much for just publishing someone's address. You do see that sometimes, I guess, with like when they were posting Brett Kavanaugh's address so that they could try to get him murdered. But that's about the only case I can think of. When I got doxxed, Human Turd and his turd throwing wife, Eric Wemple of the Washington Post, showed up at the place where I lived, but I wasn't there at the time. But which is probably for the best, because I think if I'd been there, I probably would have like kicked him in the nuts or something. But didn't happen. I wasn't there. There was no showdown. But you should look up Eric Wemple and how his wife once threw a piece of dog poop at someone.
Yeah, and doxing originally came from, you know, the dropping docs, like D-O-C-S, mm-hmm. docs. That's where it came from.
Oh, documents. It was documents.
It was like documents or compiling a dossier, right? So that's like where it originally came from. But you can't get doxxed if you dox yourself, which is what I live by, which everyone's like, why do you put so much personal information on the internet? I'm like, because we have a constitutional carry state here in Arizona.
It's true.
Yeah. Nothing based. To be afraid of. And I have cookies. Like okay. We said in the chat, you just provide cookies to everybody when they show up. And then they're like, oh, wrong about you on the internet.
Do you keep any like emergency cookies that might have certain substances in them?
Like chocolate?
Or like cyanide.
Snickerdoodles have.
He's trying to sell fentanyl to you, man. You know he's up to.
Yeah, I'm not gonna fall for this. I'm not gonna fall for it.
On that note, folks, I wanted to say, when it comes to staying healthy on the go.
Nice one.
Oh man,
it's a perfect transition.
Worst transition ever. When it comes to staying healthy on the go, you can never be too prepared. Just ask Blake Neff. That whether you're a frequent traveler, a remote worker, or an avid outdoorsman, or literally anyone with a pulse, the wellness company's travel emergency kit is going to be your new best friend. If you don't have a pulse, by the way, you got bigger problems. The wellness company's travel emergency kit contains 6 prescription medications, over-the-counter meds, a comprehensive guidebook, and crucial medical supplies, all carefully curated so you get to enjoy every moment of your trip. With a team of renowned medical professionals, including Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Drew Pinsky, standing behind every kit, you know you're in trusted hands no matter where life takes you. Don't leave anything to chance. Head to twc.health/CJ and order your travel emergency kit today. That's twc.health/CJ and use promo code CJ for an exclusive 10% off at checkout. Your health and your journey matter. Travel smart and travel prepared. Kits are only available in the USA. So if you need them, get them now before you leave the country. And if you are leaving the country, then perhaps you might want to know about our next topic. And I'm going to send this over to Mike Benz, because so did Franz Ferdinand just happen again? Because we just had an assassination, you know, attempt in Slovakia, Franz Ferdinand, for people who don't know, is the assassination in Sarajevo where the heir to the, or I should say the heir apparent to the Austro-Hungarian Empire was killed. This set off a chain reaction that we refer to as World War One. Eastern Europe, of course, is the birthplace of both world wars. So World War II kicks off in Poland, 1939. And so my question, Ben, is World War III going to kick off in Slovakia?
I don't know about World War III. He did survive the assassination attempt. You know, it looks like when the dust is settled, it'll probably be closer to a sort of Bolsonaro situation when he was stabbed while attending an event, you know, in 2018, 2019. And I think that, you know, in this case, it does look like he's likely to make a recovery from what I'm seeing, although that will, I guess, remains to be seen. But, you know, there's a bigger picture here of...
Of
who done it and why. And I have been fascinated by Slovakia for some time because, you know, it's one of these, you know, V4, Visegrad 4 countries, which is very critical for the foreign policy establishment's control over as a buttress to Ukraine and as a key puzzle piece in the Grand Ukraine energy play. The Grand Ukraine energy play is basically this move by NATO energy stakeholders and the whole Atlantic Council, Atlantis's foreign policy set to make, you know, basically $1 trillion in windfall profits by prying off the natural gas market of Europe, which until about 20 years ago was 100% controlled by Russia, which made Gazprom the single largest company in the entire world in 2005, 2006. And then through State Department coerced European energy diversification policies, because Russia has the cheapest gas and the most plentiful, and otherwise you have to buy more expensive Western LNG. There's been a big part of the move here, and a big part of the Ukraine coup in 2014 was to pry Russian gas off of Europe and replace it with gas coming from the west of Ukraine rather than the east. And a central part of that linchpin plan has been the resupply. See, Ukraine has played such a vital role in the gas market, not because of all the gas that's in Ukraine, but because of the gas transit from Ukraine into Europe from Russia. There's legacy architecture that dates back 100 years. And these pipelines are expensive. They're difficult to maintain. They're deeply interconnected. That's why there's 15 to 30 year contracts on these things. And so the ideal situation is you cut off the Russian gas from the east, and you simply have a new entry point from the gas, but you keep all of that legacy architecture that goes all the way, you know, out to Rotterdam. And the way that they have plotted to do that is primarily through Poland. Poland has this vast new set of gas architecture that can take LNG coming in from the Baltic Sea and then connect through terminals from Poland into Ukraine. And this is why the political leadership of Poland has been such an important thing for NATO to control. And as we just saw with this, with what just happened there a few months ago. But Poland's ports themselves run through Slovakia. Now, this is very important because Slovakia has been on the edge for some time now. The near assassinated president there, Robert Fico, has pledged to not go through with their gas contracts with Russia. They have one set ending in 2024 and another set ending in 2027. Then they pledge to restore those gas contracts with Russia and not cooperate with the desired sanctions of the EU. They are also putting pressure on Ukraine to restore gas relations with Russia. Both Hungary and Slovakia are having conversations about having Ukraine restore some limited amount of engagement with the Ukrainian gas market. This new president has basically rejected the NATO line on the Ukraine-Russia war. And because of the leverage they have over the EU and NATO, because the whole Grand Ukraine energy play, the whole $1 trillion play to run LNG through Poland into Ukraine runs through Slovakia. If this new prime minister decides, hey, you know what, actually, you're going to put sanctions on us if we don't go along with your war, or you're going to we have a trump card over you. which is that goodbye to the gas transit to Ukraine, which, by the way, is all of Ukraine's national revenue, essentially, because in order for that gas to go from Poland to Ukraine, you need to go through us. And so because of that, there has been an incredible amount of NATO and CIA and Soros malfeasance to use the rent-a-riots, to use the whole regime change blob architecture to try to regime change FICO's leadership. Now, this has happened in tandem with FICO trying to root out the NGOs from the blob that are similar to as they were in Belarus. You guys remember that famous clip of Alexander Lukashenko talking to, I think, a BBC reporter where he says, "We've removed all your little structures." Yep. You know, when he's asked why there's no free speech in Belarus, and Lukashenko saying, "That's not free speech. Those were CIA proprietaries, essentially. Those NGOs were your pawns. They were your structures. You know, this is not a free speech issue. This is a counterintelligence issue." Well, that's the same thing in Slovakia. Slovakia has been totally controlled as a NATO vassal state until the past few years, when basically they've been pushed to the brink. And this new president rode in on a populist outrage over that NATO vassalage. And so, you know, what they've done now is 3 months before this, actually, you know, these NATO rent-a-riots, just like in Georgia, were taking to the streets because of a new law that was essentially kind of like a FARA law, which basically said that, you know, foreign-owned media in the country would not be allowed on state radio or public broadcasting on TV.
Blake, well, pay attention to all this, the opposition media, because this is important for you.
All the opposition media in the country was being backed by the CIA by way of the National Endowment for Democracy. So it was an astroturfed opposition movement the entire time. But that is their stool to be able to twist the judiciary. Oh, the other thing is they had a special prosecutor probe to try to Robert Mueller or Jack Smith, Robert Fico, out of office. And FICO has just recently gestured that he's going to end that special prosecutor probe. So now they're trying to. So they did another set of rent-a-riots there to try to basically argue that, oh, rule of law in Slovakia is overturned because now we might not be able to throw him in jail like we threw Imran Khan in jail or Donald Trump in jail. But whose rule of law is it? It's not your country. That's Slovakia.
So
that's for the Slovakian people to decide.
So for folks who are watching, and or if anyone's watching, listening back on the podcast side on the audio, Slovakia, we've got the map up right now, just south of Poland, just north of Hungary. It's very close to Romania. Again, this is the whole neighborhood. And what do all of the countries that Benz is talking about share a border with Ukraine? And of course, Poland and Belarus are next to each other. Belarus also just to the north of Ukraine. And so this has been highly caustic. I want to throw it to Blake. Blake, you know, we've seen this situation. Benz has talked about how this is a guy who's definitely a huge thorn in the side of NATO, collective West, all of that. He's definitely an Orban type. You know, as we say, we know that the guy who did this was like a 71-year-old, like ultra lib in Slovakia, definitely one of these like anti-Putin NAFO types. But I'll put it this way, rather than get into, you know, whether or not he was like actually working on CIA orders, I guess my bigger question, the thought crime, is like, do you think this is something that could spiral the neighborhood into a wider war?
I mean, it's a classic case of why all of this is so ridiculous, where you have NATO, an alliance that was created like for the security of the West, you know, so it's the U.S. and our crucial post-World War II allies to contain an aggressive foreign ideology of international communism, which is the Soviet Union and its satellite states. And then after the Cold War ends, we just decide to add every random country in the world into NATO. And that, you know, there was some justification for that. I understand it. But now it's clearly become a means to, instead of protect the U.S. and keep us at peace, it's become a thing that just sucks us into, like, it just sucks us into these dumb things. Like, I don't want to be mean. I'm sure Slovakia is nice. I'm sure that horror movie Hostel that took place there is not accurate. I'm sure Bratislava is cool. But it's a country of like 4 million. It's a country of like 4 million people, 4 or 5 million people. It's like middle income.
The Tatra Mountains of the Carpathians there, absolutely gorgeous.
I'm sure. It's lovely.
Zakopane in Poland is very nearby.
Skiing is gorgeous. It's a beautiful country.
I'd love to visit it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of great things about it, but objectively speaking, America should not have to care about Slovakia. There should not be any crisis if whatever opinion Slovakia's leader has on any international issue, because this country has half the population of Los Angeles County, and it probably has the same GDP as like the Des Moines metropolitan area or something.
Well, you know what Mitt Romney said, Jack, can you pull up on screen the specifically not just the geography, but the Poland-Slovakia pipeline. That's actually the name of it.
Lake's got the direct control there. So yeah
just run like a Google board. Image search. Just run a Google image search for the Slovakia-Poland pipeline. The idea for it actually came right before the Maidan Square kicked off. This is in 2013, right ahead of the 2014 coup, as they were planning the resupply of the gas market in Ukraine, and were simultaneously setting up the Poland LNG operation and the connective terminal through Slovakia, and it was finally completed in 2022. You know, so it's brand new, and it is the linchpin of this grand Ukraine energy play using Poland and the new cooperative government in Poland. Because you remember, before the turnover in the Poland government just recently, the Law and Order Party was expressing their dissatisfaction with the direction of NATO's line on Ukraine. So conveniently, they toppled that government. And now they are working to topple the Slovakia government so that they have total control over the gas architecture. Now, you know, Mitt Romney actually just came out, I think earlier today, and made a statement against America First and, isolationism, as he calls it, you know, because the American economy is mostly based on our affairs internationally. And, you know, it's not incorrect to say that. The issue is our corporations themselves no longer serve the American people. They don't, you know, our manufacturing is now.
We've got that you know, map
a million miles away.
Right now, by the way.
Yeah. And so the point that I'm trying to make here with the pipeline is that it's not about control over the 4 or 5 million people who live there. You know, Ukraine itself is the lowest GDP in all of Europe, you know, even before the war started. It's about the land. It's about the geopolitics of it. It's because it's just about the physics of how a gas pipeline works. You need to control the transit points in order to control the market. And I would suggest that that NATO was not necessarily constructed for the security of the Western world. I would argue that it was set up for the, you know, to secure and safeguard the commercial interests that ride on the military battering arm of the transatlantic defense establishment. It just like the, you know, the CIA does not primarily, you know, to service national security. Or look at the National Endowment for Democracy, the CIA's number one cutout, who's behind what's happening in Slovakia right now. You know who's on the board of the National Endowment for Democracy, which gets $500 million every year in congressional funding and was set up by CIA Director Bill Colby as an explicit CIA pass through to try to reestablish the CIA conduits that they have in the 1960s. On the board of the National Endowment for Democracy are representatives from Chevron, Exxon, Google, Microsoft, McDonald's, Walmart. It's the corporate stakeholders who, you know, because you don't make your money at the CIA or at the DOD, as a, you know, GS-17 making $175,000 a year. You make your money on the board seats of the corporations that you were good little boys for while you were in charge of the State Department desk there, or the DOD operations that were carving up their markets, or the CIA operations that were regime changing governments so that you could have a favorable, you know, labor policy or tax policy or regulatory environment for the corporations there. I mean, that's kind of the level of the food chain above this. And so, you know, what we're doing in Slovakia is what we're doing on every corner of the globe. It's what we're doing in Namibia and Uganda and Turkmenistan. You know, there's no plot of dirt on God's green earth that doesn't have some exploitable natural resource. And that same blob apparatus to be able to, you know, run black ops dirty tricks to control is now what we're seeing in our own domestic politics, with it being turned against us, the citizens.
So basically what you're saying is if some place has got oil or access to oil, then they need some freedom real fast. By the way, this is the same issue with why people always ask me about why does China care about the Uyghurs so much? What's the big deal? They live out in the middle of the desert of Central Asia. Well, where is Xinjiang located? Right across from Pakistan. And this is exactly where they want to build that Pakistan economic corridor across the Kashmir region, which I know Blake has been talking about recently, across from Xinjiang, so they can get all the way down to the port of Chabahar and then eventually get into Iran, eventually get into the Persian Gulf. That's what it's all about. And the Uyghurs, who were in the way with their Islamic separatist movement, didn't want them bombing the pipeline. So what did they do? They locked up all the Uyghurs. Before we end this topic, I want to go to Tyler. Tyler, you've been in that region, I think probably more than all of us combined. You know how oil and mineral rights really play a huge role there. What's your take?
Yeah, it's so interesting when you look at like Turkish relations too. And, you know, I've just been, you know, catching up on some recent news when it comes to the Southern pipelines too. I'm sure we could talk about this for hours and hours. I actually lived, as you know, in some of the bigger port areas where those companies operated out of. And it was very interesting to see.
Tyler's literally lived in the Donbass, folks.
I lived in Tuapse and Novorossiysk, where, you know, those areas are two of the largest ports, where so much of all the oil moguls and, you know, quite a few Americans that were doing business with the big companies were there. And this is a big deal. And I spent actually some time, I think we talked about this before, in Romania with a senator of the Romanian parliament who was there. And kind of just funny story, when we were there traveling around, he was the minister of oil and gas. And we would go around to all these different refineries and talk to so many different people. And this guy had a bulletproof Benz, and we were going through all the country. All these people had Romanian last names, but they were actually Russians. So just, you know, receiving and passing around and making sure that, you know, the entire business was protected throughout much of Central Europe. And so, you know, there's a lot of complication that exists. And I'm afraid that we're, you know, to say that our American understanding of how this business operates is that we're in over our skis. And for the average American to really understand what we're up against is not saying a whole lot. So,
yeah, I think it comes back to what Blake said. You know, we're sticking our nose and our fingers in dirty little pies that have no direct interest for the American people. And it goes back to Ben. Why are we there? We're there for corporate power. All right, I want to go to this next topic. We're taking a little longer on topics today, but that's all right. We got the time. We're all here for thought crimes. This one, Blake, and you know, we'll have Tyler get into it a little bit more, and then Ben, you and I can chime in. Politico Mag had a really interesting article that came out a couple of days ago talking about, and this is directly tied into something that we've all been working here, we talked about on the program a few weeks ago, regarding what if the Electoral College ends in a tie? And what does that mean for our republic going forward? Blake, you went through this article. What was your takeaway?
So, exactly. So first, I just want to set the stage, because we've talked about this a lot when we've covered Operation Cornhusker, as I recall it, which is where we've discussed trying to get Nebraska to change to winner take all. And the reason it's been important for us to work on that is if you look at an electoral college map, in fact, here, we'll just bring it up just to remind people if they have forgotten or if they haven't seen it. Let me just go to 272win.com. Highly addictive website, highly recommended for everyone who loves to do nerdy election stuff. So I've got that on screen here. So let's just go and we'll take,
it's an autism
if we
incubator.
Take the 2020 election results. And now let's go. Let's just assume we get Arizona back, and if we get Georgia back. And so this is, if you have this map, and then if you flip Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania, we win. That's great. But there's another path where we can get, if we go Nevada, which polls say Trump is up in Nevada. As we've discussed, if you flip that, it's 270 to 268. Biden wins. old Joe gets another term. But if you make Nebraska winner take all, so that Trump is going to win the state, of course, then you have a 269-269 tie. So we've discussed this, but to remind everyone, if you have a 269 all tie in the Electoral College or any Electoral College result where no one gets a majority, so you could get the most but not be a majority, this still happens. If that occurs, then the election goes to the House of Representatives. And the way the House decides is they have to vote among the top three electoral vote getters, and you vote by state. So every state's House delegation gets one equal vote. So the one representative from Wyoming, who I forget the name of, gets the same amount of voting power as all 52 of California's representatives. But that is how they do it. Odds are, right now, if we were to do this with the current House setup, you would have 26 Republican votes, 22 Democrat votes. So chances are Trump would be able to win. And that'll probably still be the case after this fall's election, unless we would badly lose the House somehow.
So which House votes? Is it the current House or the House following the
election?
It would
be the new House. Because it's the new Congress that officially tallies electoral votes on January 6th. Or I don't know. Is it the same date every time? Or is it so whatever it is, early January.
Constitutional.
So you've seated the new Congress then, and they only vote after they've failed to do it. So even though we'd know in advance, they're only counting it early January when the new Congress is seated. So it would be the new ones. What's interesting about this article, which I also have up here, it's in Politico if anyone wants to go look it up, the title, A Trump-Biden Tie Would Be a Political Nightmare, but Maybe a Boon to Democracy. That's always a word to watch out for. Anytime they're using democracy, you know that a liberal is planning something really sinister.
Let me ask Ben's about that. Ben, should we be careful about when we hear Politico saying something will be good for democracy?
I need to unfreeze my eyeballs. I think I'm like stuck. You know, where are you going with this, buddy? Like, you know, there's something very ominous afoot. I mean, they must be saying, I mean, this must involve some way that they can screw Trump and basically invoke the whole tentacles of the blob to descend on this. But let's see. Yeah. You had my interest. Now you have my attention.
Exactly. So they make the comparison. So exactly 200 years ago. So, you know, stuff rhymes. Exactly 200 years ago is the last time we had the House decide an election this way. And it was Andrew Jackson versus John Quincy Adams. And Andrew Jackson gets the most popular vote, but not every state decides through popular vote. And in the end, neither of them get a majority, because I think there was another candidate. I can't remember exactly which one was. Was it the first time Henry Clay ran? He ran like 50 different times for president. Anyway, so it goes
that is
to
wild.
The House.
It's Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, so Andrew Jackson versus Quincy Adams goes to the House, and there's the so-called corrupt bargain. Yeah, it was Henry Clay. Henry Clay cuts a deal where his electoral votes support John Quincy Adams, so John Quincy Adams becomes president. And Andrew Jackson, who I will say is very much like a Trump-esque figure for this time, my favorite fact related to that is Andrew Jackson would write letters to his friends where he would just vent about how terrible the government was. And then these letters would get published in the newspapers, and they were basically exactly like Trump tweets. People would even say like, oh, Andrew Jackson, he can't spell right. He can't write good. He's bad. He's dumb. And so it had that element to it. That's just a side thing. Anyway, he points out that the political backlash to this at the time was immense, that Jackson had gotten the most votes, probably had the most overall popular support, but he doesn't become president. One thing this does is it causes there to be a big switch to popular vote for picking the electors of each state. Mm-hmm. 4 years later, John Quincy Adams isn't a super popular president, and Jackson annihilates him, is a two-term president, and he kind of is one of the first big revisions of American political life. So what this article in Politico says could happen is it says, yeah, you know, maybe Trump will be able to win the presidency by, he's like, fast forward 200 years, and America is arguably at a precipice. On two occasions over the past 25 years, Republicans have lost the popular vote only to win in the Electoral College, where small population states enjoy an advantage. Now, Republicans could lose the popular vote again, having won it only once in the past 32 plus years, and then may try to engineer a Trump win in the House. But by playing the inside game and using a vote in the House, Republicans could perpetuate their power. But a democratic system that is no longer responsive to, we cannot put enough quotation marks around this, the will of the majority could break and create unintended consequences. This could be a watershed year for American, we need to put more quotes around this, democracy. Long stalled political reforms, from introducing Supreme Court term limits to abolishing the Electoral College, could finally sail through atop a wave. I want to cite this phrase. They will sail through atop a wave of populist democratic outrage. We're going to have people, they're going to protest in Washington, D.C., and then everyone's going to be like, this is the will of the people. It's Trump's, it's America's Ukraine moment. Oh, my God. And they'll freak out.
Crazy about this? Blake, this is exactly what the Transition Integrity Project already plotted. What you just said, a totally astroturfed, in June 2020, a bunch of military intelligence and political folks who were all never Trump, with John Podesta role-playing Joe Biden and Bill Kristol and Michael Steele jointly role-playing Donald Trump, simulated how to get Biden into office if Trump won the Electoral College.
Yeah. So there was that. And then there's so many different articles that are just very quietly paving the way for, it's like little Democrats just kind of nudging you on the arm saying, you know, we got to be ready. One of my favorites, The Atlantic in 2021, had an article, Kamala Harris might need to stop the steal. And this was looking ahead to 2024, basically saying, you know, all that stuff that was definitely illegal for Mike Pence to do to keep Trump in office. Yeah, Kamala Harris might have to do that, you know, stop the steal. And then
they just did the same thing for the electors.
Yes. And they've also said the same thing. Could the Democrats in Congress like refuse to certify a Trump win? You know, maybe we can get a few Republicans who don't want him and they'll just refuse to certify. Totally legal, everyone. That's part of our democracy. Our democracy.
Right. It's a RICO case in Georgia, but when we do it, it's democracy.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like there's no one has like more contempt for democracy than the people who like use the word democracy all of the time. There's probably some sort of aphorism that describes this phenomenon.
It's like methinks the lady doth protest too much.
That was the one I was going to say.
Says methinks the people like who are threatened by democracy. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say I love watching the meltdown when you explain to someone that just say I like just rolling the grenade into the conversation, just saying, hey, did you know that the president isn't elected democratically? And then just walking out. And then just like, boom, just on Twitter every time.
You mean like with normies and stuff?
Oh, anyone. It's just anyone, right? Like, it's like, did you know this isn't a democracy when it comes to the president? And they're just like, boom, they lose their mind in a presidential. It's great. Everyone should do it more often. It's a lot of fun.
We absolutely.
But I don't know if that's helping the polling on the Electoral College. I don't think I'm helping.
I made a comment about, you know, democracy at CPAC, and that became like the number one trending topic in the entire mainstream media. I had Bill Maher going after me. I had Joy Reid go after me like every single night. Same way that she goes after me every single night in her dreams.
I don't know if it's the exact same.
100%. 100%. Sometimes it's Trump, though. That's why she's slowly trying to morph into
Trump. She wakes
Trump,
up in a cold sweat. She just...
Yeah. Pasovic. Oh, he's done it again. I was on her show about once in 2016. She's never recovered fully. And it's true. We should pull that up at some point. I was going off on LBJ. It was great. And all because I said something about like, oh yeah, welcome to CPAC, where we're here to end democracy. Cause like that is what they had been saying about us the entire time in the run up to it. So I just repeated their own words back to them and they're like, he admitted it. Oh, he admitted it. You see? And I'm like, really? This is all it takes? Apparently that's all it takes, folks. but Tyler, in all seriousness, I mean, you're looking at polling. You're like, you know, the turning point action guy. How realistic is this 269 scenario, this tie?
I mean, it's really realistic. I mean, last time there was a kind of funky way that it could have happened. I think that involved New Hampshire. now because of how the numbers have shifted, like this is very realistic. I mean, it's basically blue wall versus like what we've talked about, Sun Belt, with as long as Nebraska gets winner take all done. So, you know, Maine, we've investigated this, we've covered this a little bit. Maine has a real challenge in getting rid of their winner take all. I mean, are adding winner take all, getting rid of their by congressional district apportionment of the electoral college votes. Nebraska is a very clear path, and Maine probably doesn't have the time to do it. And so, and it would be very unpopular in Maine, where it's very popular amongst Republicans in Nebraska, which is a very deep red state. So Nebraska gets this thing done. I mean, you are looking at a very real situation, and this starts to spark the conversation about, you know, 14th Amendment stuff, and what are the Democrats going to try to pull out? You know, they've been going after, I think they've gone after the whole Electoral College, the electors stuff. You know, I can't talk too much about that, being somewhat in the middle of all this in Arizona, but I think they've gone after this specifically to try to destroy the Electoral College. I think they're trying to use that to enrage normal Americans on something that's obviously been in their life, their entire life, whether or not most Americans realize it or not. And that's a real concern when you layer that on top of the Supreme Court conversations, on top of the ranked choice voting conversations. I mean, there's just a lot. And I think they just want to get national popular vote done, because it would be almost impossible to get rid of the Electoral College, you know, constitutionally. And that's it.
I mean, so just to bring this up,
and that's scary.
And then I want to give Mike another chance, but you mentioned that the Interstate Popular Vote Compact is this thing they've considered. You can look that up.
And we call, and by just the loose slang is national popular vote, is what people call it.
Yeah. So the idea is they think they can kind of execute this scheme. So the Constitution says you have to do the Electoral College, but it doesn't it doesn't say how you have to award your electoral votes.
Well, since we're on the topic too, to get rid of the electors, it would require a vote of 2/3 of Congress, both chambers, mm-hmm. plus 3/4 of the states to change it. Right?
Exactly. So the shortcut they try to take is they're passing this thing called the National Popular Vote Compact. And what it is these states pass identical bills that say, we will award our electoral votes to whoever wins a national popular vote only once a majority of electoral votes nationwide have passed this same thing.
Yep.
So the idea is you get 270 total electoral votes to pass this law, and then it triggers. Now, right now, this is the law with 209 total electoral votes. That is 38.8% of the total. So they're about 75% of the way there.
Which is scary.
It's all blue states that have done it. Every state that's passed this right now is one that is solidly Democratic at this point. Mm-hmm. Probably the most red one is Maine. Like, we'll get the electoral vote there. But so you could just do the math where, you know, they control, if they got Virginia back under control, they could pass it there. I think, do they have full control in Michigan right now? So like Michigan could theoretically pass this. And so what you'd really just need is you'd need one wave election where Democrats control a red state at the state level. And then they can just do this. And, you know, maybe they make slightly more gains in Arizona, or, you know, they flip North Carolina back somehow. And so they pass that there. They can pretty quickly get to that 270. I think you could debate whether this is constitutional. I think it's possible the Supreme Court would say you can't do this for some reason. Cross that bridge when you get to it. But they definitely have a plan to just blow this up. But we've been away from Mike for a while. So let's do you have any thoughts on this, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's instructive that it was such a big part of the Transition Integrity Project blueprint, and that mm-hmm. they even contemplated deploying Black Lives Matter street muscle, and what kind of favors that the Biden campaign and other stakeholders would need to do to curry favor with the Black Lives Matter street muscle in order to support a call to take to the streets to abolish the Electoral College. I mean, and this did not just come from like random people. This came from John Podesta and Bill Kristol
yep.
and Michael Steele, the former head of the Republican Party, Donna Brazile, the former head of the Democrat Party, as well as a slew of military generals and intelligence folks like Rosa Brooks, who herself was Undersecretary for Defense and was also had a CIA blue badge and teaches courses at Georgetown on how to overthrow governments. You know, democratization studies. I mean, that's what that is. It's how to overthrow a government and install a pliant vassal state in the name of democracy. So these are professional regime change artists who have a license to do dirty tricks abroad, who are plotting out in the open how to orchestrate an operation in order to through dirty tricks. And part of that included threatening secession of the Western states, basically bringing and as they do in a color revolution, having these street protests and organized shutdown of the entire national infrastructure, the highways, the federal buildings, the AFL-CIO would do mass worker strikes to bring the country to a halt until the Electoral College reform was passed.
So do you think
so this is what you're saying, that this, sorry, Blake, I think I was asking the same question though, but are you saying this is what we could see if the scenario kicks off?
If they feel that is what is necessary to win the election, I would be shocked if it doesn't, if you don't see this exact thing. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a little bit surprised that this has not been memed with greater intensity over the past several months. If you remember, it was a very high intensity thing, this abolish the Electoral College, around this time last year and in the immediate aftermath of the 2016 election, when Norm Eisen was going around and securing something like 15 to 30 different votes to not certify the election of 2016. And, so I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know if it's because the journo bots are all focused on the Trump trials and things like that, that they have not taken the time to set the table about what a threat to democracy is in the form of the Electoral College. But I do expect that to uptick, especially if they're serious about this.
And I want to add in just real quick too, and this is a real danger too, because we have a lot of states that are red states that have very loose voter initiative laws that allow the voters to send something to the ballot that effectively changes permanently the constitution of their state. And this is an issue that's been a really huge issue in Arizona. Part of the reason why Arizona is where it's at today, as being competitive even, is because of our very loose voter initiative laws. And a lot of red states have these. And so the way the Democrats are looking at this with MPV, with national popular vote, is, okay, we got to get all of our slam dunks, like you said, blue states, get them all done, right? And then they just have to spend money one state at a time getting MPV. Yeah, and they want to be strategic, because if it fails, it fails permanently, effectively, in a lot of places where initiatives are done wrong. But they still have that very open, and they have loose openings still with Texas, who they, Democrats believe that Texas has, they have a real opportunity to capture Texas long term, as soon as Houston becomes unmanageable for Republicans and conservatives, and Austin and other places in Dallas, parts of Dallas. And so, they're kind of biding their time. This is a long term strategy that they know they're going to be able to knock off, and there's no going back. Once this is done, and once this is in the constitutions of these states, this is a massive, and really it becomes a constitutional, this is why the Supreme Court matters so much, and protecting the Supreme Court and winning this election.
An underappreciated thing I do like is, if we go to this national popular vote, this back doorway, we would be going to a national popular vote without having an actual centralized, like, federal definition of, for example, who can vote.
Well, that's why they're pushing.
I know. So it's crazy, because
it's a takeover of the city.
But it's even wackier than this. What if you say parents can vote for their kids? Or this would be my favorite troll if you did this. They pass this, and then you just wait to the last minute again, and then you have Alabama or some red state come out, and they say, everyone in our state gets to vote 1,000 times, and it's a full vote. It's not 1,000th of a vote. You get 1,000 votes, and you can distribute them however you want, but it's 1,000 votes. And you just get to vote however you want for all these candidates. So you can give 800 votes to Trump and 200 to Biden, if you're just sort of split between them. Or you can go all 1,000, or you can just say, I only have like 100 votes I want to give out. Yep. Do all of that. But just let everyone vote a gazillion times. And you guys say it's popular vote. Whoever gets the most votes, you have to back. I think you could have so many shenanigans with this. It would be terrible for America, but it would be highly entertaining.
Yeah, and I think they define that in the bills too, is that it doesn't matter how you vote. They define it. They define it in all these bills as by voter.
Okay.
So even with like ranked choice voting, where you actually vote multiple times in a row for, you know, through different processes, they've identified it as so that, because that's a big question. It's like, well, what if you implement ranked choice voting for presidential? And the argument is you can't, you know, because of the Electoral College. And so that's, they could arguably do it for everything except for federal office because of how the Constitution's written. But this is you know, where you start getting into all these wonky things. And this is where, you know, it's really simple. You know, this is not complicated. What the left has done to try to eradicate basic, well-known, well-understood methods of, you know, civic engagement, which is voting, you know, learning how to run for office, do these things, they've made it in the last 5 years so complex, so confusing, intentionally, that average people who already don't know anything about the Electoral College now are even more flustered because there's all these different things happening between technology and now processes that they're and that is the intent, right? We know that's the intent. We know that's what's written. We've seen what they've tried to do. That's the playbook, and that is the destruction of America. And we're not doing a good enough job at framing that conversation as conservatives, because we are losing our country right out from underneath us on that issue.
Well, I have a way potentially for us to frame things a little better as conservatives, because we're all going to be hosting a get together. Tyler, in fact, is going to be hosting it in this June 14th to 16th, Detroit, Michigan, Du Trois. It is the People's Convention. Everybody's got to go and get this, tpaction.com/peoples, plural with an S. We've got, of course, President Donald J. Trump leading things off, Vivek Ramaswamy, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump Jr., Charlie Kirk, Tulsi Gabbard, Kristi Noem, Candace Owens, Laura Trump, myself, Senator Rick Scott, Benny Johnson, Bishop Aubrey Shines, Kimberly Guilfoyle, Congressman Lee Zeldin, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Brandon Tatum, Congressman Eli Crane, and Congressman Eric Burleson. I believe Roger Stone is also going to be there. I'm going to be doing my book launch of Unhumans at this thing. It's going to be incredible. Tyler, what is the importance of the People's Convention before we get to our very last topic?
Tyler has to leave in a sec. Tyler, you have to stay. You have to tell us about the People's Convention and why it's important.
People's Convention.
Tyler's trying to get out. No,
I mean, we are get in there, completely, Tyler. Just so you know, this is going to be bigger than the RNC convention. We're inviting everybody, so you don't have to be, you know, elected and, you know, the pomp and circumstance of all that stuff. Everybody can come, and so we're excited about this thing because we've got everybody coming, and you know what our team has put together. You just wait. It's going to be incredible with the backdrop. We obviously do our events, right? Those that have been to our events have seen it. You know, if you go to Poso's page, you can see the backdrop. I think your header image, right, Jack, is at one of our events. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We have some tricks up our sleeve and the speech of the century from the president.
Tyler, I'm thinking we might need, if he's available, a certain executive director of the Foundation for Freedom Online, maybe special VIP. What are you thinking? Special VIP, Mike Benz. Benz, what do you say? You in, man? Benz, I think you're muted.
Oh yes, I'm sorry. I was muted. I couldn't contain the excitement. Yeah, no, I've seen those PPUSA parties look like a lot of fun. I've been waiting to go to one for a while. So put me in, coach.
No, let's get you in. TP Action. TP Action, by the way, TP Action, for the lawyers out there, this is our C4. Yeah. This is our C4. This is definitely not our C3. We would never dream of cross-mingling or cross-pollinating any of that. No, but I think, if you're,
we know
if
the
you're
Democrats,
available, man,
Democrats
we
never break rules about, you know, which organization can do what. Ever.
This is Turning Point
speaking
Action.
Speaking of Democrats and liberals breaking rules, Blake, I'm going to have to ask you to bring up our final topic of the evening.
Okay, we're going to have a quick blitz. We're going to be reacting to like three pretty brisk things here, but it's important that we be able to react to all of them. So first of all, we want to warn you, this is not, you're going to think this is a story you heard from a month ago, but it's actually not. And so this is, brace yourself, just play 163. Do we have that? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, if you've got kids watching right now, yeah, get them out of here.
So mercifully, there's no sound here, but I don't think it leaves too much to the imagination. That is German politician Martin Neumeier. He's a member of the Free Democrat Party. They're not the same thing as the Democrat Party of the United States, but, you know, spiritually,
I mean, it looks pretty similar.
So what he's doing is he's licking a toilet brush there and licking a toilet. He's very into various toilet-related adventures. Ugh. That is a political candidate in the country of Germany, which is funny by itself, but it's extra funny because a socialist politician in Spain, not even a month ago, was caught with his own. He was like making videos of himself eating a certain bodily excretion. And so, you know,
was this the same guy that was covered in feces too?
This guy was making himself beards of like
so we did it, boys.
So anyway,
we did it, boys. We have memed Lib into reality.
Yes, we have. It's all been true.
It was 4chan always wins. 4chan always wins.
And so it's, you know, it's they always say we should be open about what we are, and I guess we made the world, you know, the left.
I just want to point this out too. I mean, and again, I hate being, you know, there's lots of things that we can be extraordinarily condescending to Americans about, but Europeans and public bathrooms, they have, I mean, these are the worst of the worst. I mean,
by
so
the
this
way,
is
the chat is for, just losing it right now.
For Americans, like this, it would be it one off. Thing to lick an American toilet. It's pretty clean. If you go to Europe, I mean, sometimes it's just a literal hole in the ground. So this guy, how's this guy going to, I don't even know how he's still alive, to be honest with you.
But I do want to say the numbers, the chat, you know, the viewership is going up as we're playing this. So, you know, you guys are complaining, but at the same time.
I'm showing it again.
It's so gross. It's so disgusting.
Do I have a way to like block that?
It like makes me want to throw up. It's like, oh, I can't handle craps and like I wake up and like my dog's crapped in my kitchen. My wife can hear me. She's like, she's like, stop being disgusting.
I like this humans. Reply from CR for Freedom. We put Old Yeller down, put him down. I think he's trying to put himself down, but. Maybe the Germans are.
I would go to World War III over
lightning
this.
Lightning round, Blake. I thought.
Okay. All right. Lightning round. This next bit is gonna be way better.
Like Markov Robbins.
The next bit is we have to react to this one instead. Let's play 162.
The paparazzi really are everywhere.
Everything you were told as a kid is wrong. You make me
want to. Gay penguins, bisexual lions, sex-changing clownfish.
This is a queer planet.
Queerness has always existed. It's only in humans that we have such a stigma about it.
The idea of just having two fixed sexes is clearly out of style.
Mother Nature is pretty open-minded. Sex is not just for reproduction.
It's clear that no matter where you look on our planet, nature is full of queer surprises.
To be honest, we should all probably get laid a little more than we do.
You know, the most disgusting part, this is an NBC documentary called Queer Planet, and CR for Freedom hitting another home run. They're turning the frogs gay. They're turning every animal
gay. They're turning the freaking frogs gay!
The craziest thing is the gayest part of that ad, or like the grossest part, was like that flower like blowing up. And there was a lot of subtext to that one. But man, they're gonna gay up everything, man. The animals are queer.
I remember the plants when are queer. Like, you know, at like National Geographic would just kind of show, I don't know. Like, here's my question. You know, so you've got to be in the wild for a while. Like when they did the first Planet Earth documentary, which is BBC, I know it wasn't National Geographic, but it was BBC. Didn't they spend like 5 years getting all that footage, like the incredible footage that they have like all over the world? My question is, how long did it take them to find that footage of the lions? And here's my thought crime. Did they do something to potentially like, you know, entice
they up with the lions?
Footage? Yeah. Did they do something to make that scene take place?
You know, it's weird looking at this too, because we're so far past gay and lesbian in like the current LGBT thing. It's almost quaint. you know, my experience watching that ad was like, oh yeah, I remember gay and lesbian. Like the transgender stuff has like the artificial monstrosity castration of children thing is like so dominated, you know, the front, you know, kind of like what the identity of the queer movement is for since gay and lesbian have been accepted for so long now in terms of, you know, where the battleground is in the culture wars, like everything has moved into the transgender thing. I don't even remember the last time that I met, you know, a red-blooded lesbian, so to speak. It seems like, you know, the transgender market has almost, you know, eaten into the traditional just kind of, you know, gay market, because now there's just such a big move into the trans thing, which is the farthest thing from the natural habitat of the savannah. I mean, this is like artificial, you know, mad scientist stuff. So, I you know, I actually am not sure that piece of propaganda is going to serve its intended purpose.
All right. Andrew's telling us we should play 179. This is actor Elliot Page, formerly Ellen from that movie Juno, talking about everything's queer now. It's like not even cool anymore. So let's play that.
It's often called like niche, you know, queer things niche. 30% of young people identify as LGBTQ+. So I'm like, I'm sorry, this is not niche. You tell really specific stories about like cishet people. I'm not calling that odd plot niche. Thank you.
Is she like tweaking there or something? She's very jumpy.
I just want to say that, you know, Elliot Page, wow, just really a success story in the trans movement, probably one of their greatest successes that we've seen. Just someone who's clearly very well adjusted, is taking everything absolutely in stride. You know, obviously seeing her slash his career skyrocket from this, you know, Zur ought to give herself a pat on the back. Really should.
Yeah, well, you know, and a lot of this is connected to the other identity issues. You know, the fact is, I mean, you see so much of what's happening right now with the kind of privilege Pokemon point thing and the need to sort of evade the identity of being, you know, a sort of heteronormative or a sort of white, you know, anything that gets you farther from the identity of the disadvantaged groups. I mean, it gets you accepted into college at a higher rate. It gets you a more high paying job. It moves you up the ladder. It allows you to bring all sorts of windfall lawsuits because now you're a protected class. It makes you harder to fire because they don't want to risk those lawsuits. It gives you cachet. You are now qualified for all the different government grants and programs that are only accessible to you if you have something, some flavor to you that allows you to access, privilege in the actual sense of that. And so I think that she's not necessarily entirely wrong with like everything's moving to that direction now, because this is in the schools at so young an age, and people, as they're developing their identity, know who the good guys and the bad guys are, so to speak, from everything that they are indoctrinated to read. And so they're rushing to be one of the good guys to like join some sort of queer thing. That's actually what I think is behind bisexuality at such a, you know, high rate, according to these things. I think a lot of straight people are basically saying, well, you know what, I'm kind of bi, I guess, just so they don't need to necessarily lop off their private parts, but they can still get some of those Pokemon points.
I just feel like, especially that page, the video, I just like, one, it's fun to imagine taking that video even 30 years ago and saying like, this is the future and this, but I also just feel like in 30 years or so, like we'll look back and this will be one of those videos, like they take it out of context and they'll just say, yeah, so there was like a 10-year period a long time ago where everyone was gay and they were all super crazy. Like they'll totally overblow. Like it's too common as it is, but they'll make it even more common. And we'll all like have to defend ourselves and we'll just be like, no, I wasn't like that. You're overblowing it. And they'll be like, no, look at this video. There's everyone was gay then. For 10 years, everyone was gay.
Well, the thing as well about Ellen Page is that I don't even remember what I'm supposed to say anymore, whatever. But when she put out that book, Page Boy, does everybody remember this? This was like the memoir. This was the explanation. And the idea was like, this is why I came about with this. So she goes in and talks about actually being sexually abused by directors. And obviously there were a lot of there's a lot of stories involving Bryan Singer, the X-Men director, the original X-Men director. And so there were definitely issues with this. And so, but then the next thing is like, oh, and then I went to therapy and they said I should do this immediately. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. Like something horrifically traumatic happens to you. And that's initially what these therapists start saying is, you know, what you should do is something that's potentially even more physically and mentally traumatic than the thing that already happened to you, as if that's going to help you out. And I'm sorry, you know, I was joking about it before, but we've seen some of the pictures, we've seen some of the images. This is obviously someone who is not well. This is someone who's not well mentally. This is someone who's not clearly not well physically, not well spiritually. And of course, someone who went through a lot and somehow the answer of that is like, oh, you should go and perform non-adjustable permanent surgery to yourself, you know. And in Peru, yeah, so, producer Andrew's in the chat. In Peru, they just declared this a mental illness. So I'm told that the leader of Peru is kind of a leftist to begin with. And so, this is weird. I don't know. Final thoughts, everybody, because
last
I don't
one,
know how
we have to weigh in.
This. Oh, we have one more.
Our final thing is we have, what's the number here? 171. We have to pass final judgment on the weird Dark Souls looking painting of King Charles. 171.
Oh,
Bring it up. Are they gonna? There we go. All right. So you can see that is the disembodied head of King Charles atop his red outfit with a background of slightly lighter red. If you mirror reverse it and put it next to each other, there's kind of like a demon head on it. It's all kind of strange.
Do we have that one of it mirrored?
I don't have that off the top. I just saw that on like Twitter somewhere, unfortunately.
But that's been floating around. Bannon posted it too. That thing, it's actually like, I don't know, right? You know, you see stuff like this and you're like, oh no, they're not messing with us. They're not putting up symbology, and people are out there going, no, this is totally normal. And then you see something like this and you're just like, I give up, man. They're all just demon worshipers. I give up. I can't do it.
Yeah, I feel bad because, you can go, Mike.
Can you go to YouTube? Or just even Google image this, but YouTube, type in Ghostbusters Viggo the Destroyer.
Yeah, exactly.
And tell me that picture.
We just watched
does
that
look
we literally just
exactly
that.
Like? Oh, really?
Ghostbusters 2. Yeah.
Yeah, this is Viggo the Destroyer. Like this is the the royal aristocrat caked in goo coming out of the painting. You know, in this, and it kind of is,
been,
if you think about
the way,
role of the
there
British
crown. There are thousands of pictures of, like, European royals and European royal families going back, you know, hundreds of years that have been preserved for, like, over the centuries. None of them looked like this. It's like, he's either on the throne or they're out hunting with the hound dogs and they're chasing a fox or something. It's like a nice classical portrait or whatever. No, this, it's like, no, I'm sorry. Like I, the British royal family and all the stuff they say, you know, I don't know. What am I supposed to say? Someone tell me what I'm supposed to say.
It's too bad to me because King Charles actually he's relatively traditional in aesthetics. He's done a lot of campaigning against bad architecture in the UK. He's a big supporter of like classical, house architecture, classical garden design. He'll write forwards to books about this and stuff. Like he's not this. I mean, he's the king of England. He's not a Philistine who just easily falls
for
like dumb artistic trends. So, controversial take. Yeah. While that stuff is really disturbing
to look at,
it's really weird when you do that. I do think that is actually like a coincidence. I don't love the painting. Okay, it is definitely pretty.
So Ben's Blake
looking.
Is. Blake
it's
is like our
demonic.
anti-conspiracy theorist.
It's
like,
better than
like,
the Obama painting.
I will be
painting.
Against the conspiracies, but then you see something like this, and it's just like
it's
performative.
You know,
it's better
you know,
than the Obama painting with the leaves. That painting was worse. This one
that was, just, but that was just weird. This is like I'm looking like yeah. I kind of want. I actually have to delete this from.
Well, no, I mean the Obama computer. One. The Obama one had demonic elements to it. There, you know, there was the person in it, you know.
This is play 182, by the way. We've got what Ben's was just asking for.
Yeah, there you go. It's he's like coming out of the painting. And the other thing is in Ghostbusters, the end of the movie, there's the pink slime that comes down around him. If you remember, it's the pink slime takes over the museum. So our good king over here is like in the slime of it, as I see.
By the way, Viggo the Conqueror also right? He's Eastern European. That's Eastern Europe again. That's the border region with Ukraine. So Ben's has shown us how it all goes back.
He wanted us to know. He wanted us to see what he was doing.
Before we go, put up I think it's 183, the Obama one. I just want people to see it.
Yeah.
If you look close, what's also great about it is it's weird looking, but like the painter is not very good. Like the chair's proportions don't work out. Like the parts that are behind Obama, like it is not a normal chair. It's like he's on top of two half chairs. It's really funny.
Even and like his left foot doesn't really seem to be connected to his left leg.
Yes. See that? Yeah. That's
it's
all
got that
up.
Like AI generated thing where it like screws up the fingers. You know, it's got that going on with the feet. It almost looks like he's wearing high heels because of that. I mean, this is just junk.
And there's a part of his sleeve that's like colored differently, and the outline of what's colored differently, I don't even want to describe for people because we're already in trouble for what we've covered here. But so I would at least say I'll take King Charles's portrait over this. So we're losing the portrait battle to the UK, even with the new King Charles painting.
So do you think this is like, let's go full conspiracy theorist now. So this is like the Illuminati signaling the Freemasons, you know, in the great overstate war that's going on. You know, there's different symbols in this that we can't perceive, but it's clearly something that's going back and forth.
Yeah, or it's like a thought piece thing, you know, like a Janet Jackson pop a nipple out kind of thing. It's like, ooh, look, see, this thing's a little funky. It's a little weird. You know, maybe it'll pop up. Maybe we'll get more than seven retweets from our official account on Twitter now.
Is Joe Biden's official painting just going to be like him eating a giant cheese pizza? And then they'll just be like, oh, that's what our painting is for Joe Biden.
Yeah, him licking an ice
cream. Completely insane. Completely insane. All right, we're all going to be destroyed now. Mike Benz, thank you for joining us here on Thought Crime Thursday. Let people know your coordinates.
On X at Mike Benz Cyber. Also, I have a Rumble account, Mike Benz Cyber. Also, my foundation's foundationforfreedomonline.com. Thank you guys very much for having me. Have a great night.
It was awesome. Love the chat. Blake, yourself? I guess you don't really have coordinates, do you, Blake?
No, I you can find me here.
We find here. I'm at Jack Posobiec. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, keep committing more thought crimes.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.